Okay, cool. All right, everybody. We've got lots to cover today, and I hope we have time to get through everything. One item that, well, let me start off with the overview. Basically, today we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about sort of level two or high level quality control systems and retention systems. And you know, obviously, they're you know, our four fundamental focuses for operating, you know, martial arts schools are enrollments, renewals, retention, and quality. And today we're going to, you know, be talking a bit about retention and quality kind of combined. But the new renewed focus on this is important right now, especially because, you know, obviously we need to be focused on new student acquisition with back to school and things like that, and we can certainly chat about that a bit today. If you have, you know, specific questions, we can certainly do that. The renewed focus on customer service is extremely important right now in today's market, in today's day and age, right? Obviously, we're all dealing with, at some level, and in some areas it's a little more dramatic than others, but, you know, we sort of have this lingering economic fear out there in the marketplace, right? There are still, you know, people who are, you know, psychologically affected by this, if not directly affected by it. And the way that we're successfully selling to these people is a little bit different than it was, you know, 36 months ago when everybody thought that the economy was on fire and all that sort of stuff. So we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about that. We're going to spend a good amount of time talking about building systems inside your school to ensure not only top quality results for your black belts, but also about what that customer experience needs to look like or needs to feel like to the customer to ensure long-term retention. So we're going to spend the bulk of our time on that. I have two quick housekeeping items to discuss ahead of time. Number one is reinforces the message that we were just talking about. Let me go back to our schedule that I emailed around everybody just a few days ago. At the last live...
Hey, Toby, I didn't know if you knew that I had been here.
Oh, yes, sir. I got you.
Okay.
At our last live meeting in Orlando, We all sort of discussed, and there was a pretty decent consensus in the room. Our original intent was to tag the Inner Circle and Peak Performer live meeting onto the end of the Extreme Success Academy coming up in San Diego. And as we started to talk through different things that we were doing, not only in Mile High Karate, but just in general, sort of the idea floated around the room about, hey, why don't we do our next live meeting at the Mile High Karate Black Belt Retreat out in Colorado, to be able to get kind of a behind-the-scenes look at what we're doing for, you know, to facilitate those quality control systems and long-term retention systems. And that black belt experience is kind of one of the things that we're going to talk a little bit about today, so it ties in pretty nicely. So that was basically the consensus. And I've had a couple of people who have sort of seconded and thirded that motion over the last couple of weeks. So that's the decision that we've made is we've got the Extreme Success Academy coming up October 1st through the 3rd, which, again, we've been successful at getting Brian Tracy to come and do the keynote address. And we also have we have some really good speakers. We have some really good presenters. We're also going to be spending a good amount of time, you know, Master Oliver, of course, has volunteered to do a few sessions for us. And we have Don Southerton, who is, if you don't know his background, he's got a very interesting background in martial arts, especially at growing large martial arts organizations, all the way back to Master Glazer's, what was the name of the company, Master Oliver? Master Glazer's Martial Arts, wasn't it?
Well, no, it was, Don had five schools in the Hudson Valley.
Right.
And so he had a very large organization in the Hudson Valley in the 80s and in the 90s. And then there was, and I won't go into the long, convoluted story, but there was a gentleman by the name of Mark Glazer, who was the first and, to my knowledge, only martial arts school to ever successfully pull off an IPO. So he went public, and there was conversation at the time about doing a merger, which would have included Don Southerton Schools, Mile High Karate, Steeple Valley, and possibly Tim and Dave Kovar. And for a variety of reasons, I was the second in line and never decided to move forward on the deal. And so Steve and Tim and Dave Kovar never did. But Don Southerton ended up working full-time in that organization. for 6 to 12 months. So he sold off his individual schools rather than merging it in, and then worked with Mark Leisure and that company, developing training systems, one thing or another. Then he came out, and he was basically, for me, in the same role that Jeff Smith is in now, about 10 years ago. So he was head instructor for me, and they decided to take a completely different career path, and now he's working with back and forth in Korea, working with Korean companies, mostly teaching the American counterparts how to deal with the Koreans. He's done graduate and postgraduate work in culture and in Korean history and one thing or another. I think he's written now 8 or 10 books, but he's got clients that include Kia and Hyundai and several of the other big, big companies. And then on the full circle, he's now working with Mile High Karate, with Smash Burger, and with a couple of others to do international expansion into the Pacific Rim. So, he's a very eclectic background. But while he was running his multi-school chain, and he was one of the founding members of the EFC Board of Directors, by the way, as well. But while he was running his chain of schools in the Hudson Valley, he was also the martial arts instructor. I forget for how long, but for quite a while.
Master Oliver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're...
It's Robert Blum from New York.
Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because Master Sutherton was my first instructor.
Well, there you go. There you go. And what year was that?
1986, 85.
Okay. So that would have been when he had probably 3 schools in that area?
Actually, at one point, he was up to almost 7 out here.
Yeah. I was thinking in 85, he was probably at 3 or 4.
I think there was 3 schools out here back then.
Yeah. So, he's got a long track record and, well-established.
Exactly. Yeah, and those were exactly the bullet points that I wanted to point out, especially the West Point connection, which is really going to be useful for our folks who are implementing leadership programs in their school, but also this sort of large organizational growth and development experience that he's had, that I know a lot of our guys need to be thinking about their martial arts school just in those terms, in terms of being the leader of their organization, not necessarily just being a martial arts instructor. So he's bringing a lot of that to the table, which we're all pretty excited about. So anyway, this isn't a commercial for the event. However, if you haven't reserved your seat, you're going to want to do that pretty quickly. So the consensus was, actually, you need to do it right away, in fact, because that's all all that's going to be filling up pretty quickly here.
Well, on both of these events, it's important for them to book their room so they get a room block rate rather than the rack rate. In Keystone, Colorado, the rack rate is probably triple what our rate is. And that's right at the outer front edge of the of peak season, which is going into ski season, obviously, up there. And I know the hotel in San Diego is the same way. We had a lot of panicked people at the last minute. If I recall, Toby, you were dealing with them, not me, but who were having a hard time because they were being quoted, $300-$400 rather than whatever the negotiated rate we had was.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So the moral of the story there then is we'll be doing the Extreme Success Academy October 1st, 2nd, and 3rd in San Diego. The host hotel is the Crown Plaza out there. Everything's good. I'll send everybody the link today, but it's also on the website, so you can reserve your room under that block. The Keystone event is a month later. It's November, and we haven't finalized the final date for exactly when we're going to do the Peak Performer Inner Circle meetings. However, we will within the next 48 hours. And I'll send that around to everybody. But that's
we could probably finalize that on the call here. What I've told them is the actual testing is Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday. And what I've told the hotel so far is that we plan to have meetings also all day on Thursday and Friday, leading up to the event. Mm-hmm. And so we could, you know, we could finalize today how we wanted to do that structure with feedback from everybody in the call, if you want, Tobin.
Yeah, I mean, I think our concept was to do Thursday and Friday, and we have enough, since we have you there and me there, we'd very easily be able to facilitate both the PeopleFormers and Inner Circle separately at times and perhaps merged at times. There's two other things that, well, one other thing of note that I want to accomplish while we're out there as well, and I've talked to a bunch of our Inner Circle members about this already, perhaps not as many PeopleFormer members, but we definitely want to collect content for the next book project, but we want to do those one-on-one little interviews, too, for your websites and all that other stuff. So we'll be able to accomplish that late in the evening rather than during the meeting time. So I would think that Thursday and Friday makes the most sense. If anybody has any, I guess, challenges with that or thoughts about that, that'd be useful. But our thought would be the 6th, I think that is. No, the 3rd and 4th. Is that right?
I think Friday, Saturday, Sunday, the 5th, 6th, 7th. I'm not looking at a calendar either right now. But so it would be flying into, and you fly into Denver International Airport, you'd want to have a car. It's about an hour into the mountains. So it would be booking the room at the hotel on Wednesday, and it's a hotel and a series of condo complexes that are all attached right there. And by the way, in both cases, these are beautiful venues. The one in San Diego is the one I went and did a little one-day seminar at 5 or 6 months ago, and it sits literally you could walk from the airport over to the hotel, and it sits on the marina. The airport in San Diego is right downtown, so on one side you have the marina and then the ocean, and on the other side you have downtown and the airport. So the San Diego venue is beautiful, and again, easy from the airport. The Keystone venue is a spectacular venue. It sits right on a pond, which is in the winter is the ice skating ring, just a little off of where all the ski lifts are. It's a beautiful venue there, but it's probably about an hour and a half actually up into the mountains. So you need to have a rental car, and there are shuttles that you can pick up from the airport to Keystone if you don't want to rent a car, or I'm sure people can connect.
Right. Okay. So again, so that would be you'd probably fly in the 3rd, which is Wednesday, and then Thursday, Friday, we'll do meetings all day, have the evenings to accomplish some other goals, and then if you wanted to stay Friday, Saturday or Sunday to watch any of the exam, you're certainly welcome. I think the thing that we talked about during the last Inner Circle meeting that was particularly useful that they may have wanted to watch was part of Saturday and part of Sunday. We talked about the Victory Circle and sort of how what you've created out there with this retreat is modeled after, well, in part, modeled after Tony Robbins's, Day with Destiny or Breakthrough Seminars, where he takes people through a breakthrough experience like the firewalk and those types of things. And really psychologically what you've created out there is very similar to that, where these students are going through an experience over the weekend that literally they'll take with them for the rest of their lives. I mean, this is, again, part of what we want to talk about today is creating that customer experience very deliberately. And one of the things that I've experienced in my past, I think, that this for me was a big wake-up call, was in organizations that I've been with in the past, they sort of had all this mystique built up around being a black belt and all of this stuff, which is very good. And then you kind of test every couple of months, and then, after 3 years or 3.5 years or whatever, you do an exam, and maybe it's a little bit more difficult, and maybe instead of it being an hour or two long exam, maybe it's 2 or 3 hours, and then you're a black belt at the end of the day. And that's okay, but what you've created here is something much different, right, and much more, I think, spiritually, impactful to someone's life. And when they go through this weekend thing, first of all, it's a 9-week-long process, and we'll talk about this. First of all, it's a 9-week thing that they go through, not just a weekend, but they go through this 3-day experience that very much is like what Tony does with folks. He takes them through this set of experiences that they don't think that they can really do, and he shows them the potential that they have.
Having been through a bunch of Tony's stuff is this is far beyond any of his weekend things that he does. you know, he's tried to replicate the firewalk thing when people break a board or something like that, and you know, break through a little barrier. But see where the genesis of it is, if everybody would go back and read their Cialdini book, Influence, Science, and Practice. And if you look at the section, and it's quite a controversial topic. But if you look at the section that it talks about hazing rituals, right? And if you in the book, he talks about the fact that, you know, whether you're talking about fraternities or whatever, it's really impossible to get rid of hazing rituals. And people think that you should because they think that there's something wrong with it. Well, you know, the only thing that's really wrong about hazing rituals is having a 18-year-old kid make up what it's going to be and having him scarf down a piece of raw steak and then choke on it and die. But the concept of a hazing ritual truthfully is to create this big barrier that feels insurmountable, so that at the other end of the process you feel like you really, really accomplished something. And the simplest example of that is your kid turns 16, and choice one, you buy them a $20,000 car. Choice two is for the previous year, they've had to work, 5 hours a week, and you put a certain amount of money away towards it. And they have now $10,000, and you match the $10,000 so that they have a vested interest. And, we all know, although we break the rule, is which way is it they value the car and put more value in it, and it's when they have that accomplishment behind it and that skin in the game. And so, as you talk about what it is, Toby, if I were to think about what this is, it was designed to be a combination of Marine boot camp, a frat hazing ritual, and the Tony Robbins Mastermind Weekend. And, not the short one with Firewalk, but the Date with Destiny is what I'm trying to think of. The one that was Awaken the Giant Within was based on. And so if you go read Awaken the Giant Within, it was originally held at his house in San Diego. He's got a house there.
It might be me, but I think we're losing you, Mr. Oliver. I think your phrase now. I think we got to go back and read "Awaken the Giant Within," and then I think we lost you. And now I think you're gone. Either you're gone or I'm gone. I'm not sure which. Well, okay. So let's assume that he'll plug back in here when his signal picks back up. But and there's a couple of items we can accomplish at the same time. But the point's well taken, is that again what we're talking about today is the student quality and this student experience sort of concept and how we can implement that type of thing. And again, the Black Belt exam that he's designed that really is brilliant for a lot of different reasons is deliberately designed to create this experience for the student that literally they take with them for the rest of their life and really actually does accomplish what we say we're going to accomplish.
I'm back.
Okay, good. Okay. Well then the final logistical item then before we get back to Awaken the Giant Within, I think, would be, so we'll do the fourth and fifth. Let me look at that again. So we'll do the fourth and fifth for the mastermind meetings, which is November 4th and 5th, Thursday and Friday. Then you're welcome to stay, any part of Saturday, Sunday, Saturday, Sunday that you want, and watch some of this stuff happen, live, and that'll be good. That way we'll have the evenings to do this sort of the celebrity interview things that we want to accomplish and things like that. So you won't want to miss either one of them. And I know it's travel month back and forth, but I think we're much better suited to do that and to have everybody that wanted to go see this thing be able to go do it and be able to kind of kill two birds with one stone. And then we'll pick up our next meeting, mid-January or so, something like that, for the next year. So I think that makes the most sense. Now, the final logistical item I had was Mark Hagebusch. If you're on the line, Mark was through some wacky schedule challenge or whatever. Mark sort of had a glitch at the last meeting and wasn't able to sort of ask the group for help. on projects that he was working on. So, Mark, if you're there, go ahead and unmute any time and jump in. We'd sure like to be able to spend some extra time with you. And since we have the group together on the phone, if there were any items that you needed specific direction on or specific, you know, you wanted to share specifically, we'd love to be able to do that. And then the final item that I had for today was we'll be talking more about, well, and you know the web thing doesn't make any difference, but we'll be talking about at the Extreme Success Academy a couple of those, a couple of the results that we've been talking about, we've been working on these websites. So we'll talk about that at the Extreme Success Academy. That's probably the, you know, time for discussion today. But so Master Oliver, take us back then to it's Awaken the Giant Within, that structure.
Yeah. Well, you know, the 3-day event is truly only the culmination of a 4-year process, but of about an 8-week process. And what we've done in the past when we have people up at the event is, you know, make sure we get several of the black belts together and explain what the prep process looks like to get there as well, because it's really a time. And again, if everybody's read, and if you haven't, you should, the book West Point Way of Leadership, is it talks about one of the things that they work on at West Point is they work on weaning people off of the need for, you know, for incremental rewards. And one of the things that we try to do is, you know, truthfully wean out those who shouldn't be and aren't ready to be loyal to the organization, put them through a you know, unbelievably tough process, so that at the end of it, they're not only you know, feel like they've accomplished something that felt impossible going in, but have a tremendously high value not only to their black belt but to the, you know, to the organization. And you know, and years ago, one of the things we were trying to fix was how do you avoid having somebody get to their first degree black belt and drop out. And another thing we were trying to fix was having them think of their black belt as being something that was purely physical. So they learned a lot of forms and stuff and got their black belt, but not have it be tied back into pride of association, pride to the organization, loyal to the organization. And, you know, for most everybody on the call, you're single school operators, and it's, you know, believe it or not, fairly easy to create that personal loyalty and so forth, just because they typically have a relationship with you over 4 or 5 years. But now if you have 5, 6, 7, 10 schools or more than that, how do you get them to truly be loyal to and anchored into the organization and have them feel that achievement is, one, brings them a great step more loyal to the organization, but also at the same time really gives them a feeling of pride of association. So the process is really designed to be those two things. And then over the years, we ended up with that kind of Awaken the Giant Within piece of it, which is to really anchor them into beyond the physical to you know, roles and responsibilities and their value system and the value system of the organization, and have them look at and think about that. And obviously you're doing all that stuff with, you know, in our case, a median age of 10 to 12 for new black belts. So we have to engage and have responsibilities and have requirements for the parents as well. And another piece of controversy along the way was holding kids responsible for their parents. And so, you know, all the way along the way, you know, if the child is doing fine, but the parent's an idiot, they don't move forward. And so we want to make sure we have a family who is truly representative of a black belt student, a family who's truly engaged and loyal to the organization, a family who truly has bought into everything that we're trying to teach and the values of the organization. So it's a screening and a developmental process at the same time, with a heavy emphasis on the hazing aspect.
Yeah, I think let's take a look at this from two different perspectives. Obviously, what we you know developing high-quality black belts is important. Developing long-term student retention is extremely important, especially right now. This is, you know, this is definitely something that we all need to be thinking about is, you know, deliberately not accidentally orchestrating the student experience, right? And I think all too often, in fact, you know, we have one of our folks, I'm sure he's on the call, but one of our folks is from a very traditional organization headed by, you know, one of the very high-ranking traditional masters or whatever. And the student experience in that association is completely dictated by the curriculum, right? So the thing that that association has focused on is here's how you teach it, here's the sidekick, here's form number one, form number two, here's the black belt requirements. And all that's very important, right? I mean, no question. But there's more that's important, right? I mean, and I'm preaching to the choir in some part, but there's more to creating an exceptional student experience than just teaching sidekick and forms, right? I mean, this is really about creating, you know, Starbucks is about a hell of a lot more than coffee, and it has to be more about coffee, or no one in their right mind would go pay $7 for a latte, right? I mean, it just wouldn't happen. It's just like De Beers. We talked about this at the Quantum Leap. De Beers had a unique problem that they had to try to solve, right? Every diamond that's mined in Africa makes every other diamond that exists on the face of the earth less valuable if you believe in supply and demand, right? But supply and demand are disconnected from that business model because of a very clever marketing scheme where De Beers has convinced the American public, in fact, the world public, that they should spend between 2 and 3 months' salary on a diamond. See, it doesn't matter to them how many diamonds exist in the world. It's a freaking rock. They're pulling them out of the soil in Africa like there's no tomorrow, and they're doing it with slave labor that makes $3 a year, right? I mean, so there is no supply problem with diamonds. So what they had to do was make it about something different, right? They had to make the experience about something different, and they've done a masterful job of that. So I think, you know, Starbucks, De Beers, you know, Disney, a lot of companies like this who have accomplished creating a member or a student experience that transcends what it really is really worth paying attention to. So maybe, Mesh Culver, maybe a question for you would be, let's take a look at it from two different angles. We sort of just looked a little bit at the black belt angle. What about on the front end? What is it that we can and should be doing on the front end of our student experience when we enroll a new student, when a new lead comes in, whatever the case may be, at the beginning of the relationship? What are some of the things that we need to be focused on there that are very different than, you know, I just enrolled a student to teach him kicks and punches? You know, what types of things are we doing that are extremely important to create this experience on the front end of the relationship?
Well, you know, maybe start by looking at your program from an overview, right? So if you take it as an overview, and I'm going to generalize across styles, but let's say you have year one, year two, year three, year four, first degree black belt, then second and third degree black belt, right? And so
let me jump in for half a second because you just said something that's important. Don't, and everybody on this call knows better. We're very focused on teaching high quality curriculum, right? And the upside is once you have a curriculum in place to black belt, you never have to screw with it anymore, right? It's good, right? But the thing I think that's really important is that when you're doing these exams, by the way, these black belt exams, this isn't about how do I make it as easy as I possibly can for the black belt, meaning it's as easy as it can be for the brown belts, right? They're doing comprehensive testing. They're examining every material they've ever learned, plus they're examining on 12 reading requirements that they've had to do, plus the parents had to do, plus they're examining on, right? So they're examining on a huge chunk of curriculum. Some associations are out there, in fact, you know, I've been part of a couple of them, that really their solution to graduating a lot of black belts is making it as damn easy as they humanly can to generate black belts. And this ain't that. This is the opposite of that. So I thought that's a useful frame for everybody.
Well, I would say it even differently. It's about how to make the test as hard as possible, short of being accused of child abuse or assault. And maybe it's just my Texas roots in Oklahoma, but, you know, it's not about them, you know, sitting in front of each other and beating the crap out of each other, but it's, you know, literally like the end test is Friday night at 7 till Sunday at 3 or 4 or 5 o'clock, and they go straight through. But see, I think the thing you've got to recognize on that is it's an incremental process. You have a that's where I was going back to that, you know, year one, year two, year three, year four, right? At year one, what's it all about? Well, year one, it's about constant rewards, constant pats on the back, getting a trophy for showing up. It's about getting a stripe because you managed to show up for class. It's about constant and never-ending small incremental stuff that you can do to get rewards and get recognition. So, and it's also in the first year, it's all about helping me create a vision. And again, if it's a seven-year-old, it's both the child and the parents. Helping me create a vision of how exciting it would be to be a black belt, to be a second-degree black belt, to be a third-degree black belt, and how dedicated I can be. And it's really, the first year, it's all about setting a long-term goal, and it's about building the vision in their mind and getting the excitement in their mind of being a black belt long-term. Because if you, and again, we, one of the gentlemen that is in our group I was talking to a couple days ago. See, the whole idea of, like, I do a year at a time, and then I come in and I do another year at a time, and I do, see, that whole structure screws up with the you come in and all we're doing together is deciding whether you want to be a black belt or not. And see, if I bring them in at the beginning, and there's a lot of enthusiasm, there's a lot of applause, there's a lot of excitement, there's a lot of stripes on the belts, there's new belts quickly, there's small bits of incremental material to learn. Well, it's about I'm having fun, I'm excited, I'm motivated, I'm seeing what the long term is, I'm getting acclimated into the deal, I'm excited to come two or three times a week, and you're helping me set the goal very clearly. And it's first, you know, my first interaction with you, that's what you told me you were going to do, is you're helping me set the goal to be a black belt. Now, the second year should be, I've set the goal to black belt. I'm committed to it. It's in writing. I hopefully have some kind of uniform or designation that tells the world that I've made a public commitment to be a black belt. And now it's about gradually weaning them off of constant rewards for having done little or nothing. And it's about having the bar be higher for what they need to accomplish, and it's about gradually having the bar be higher on what the physical expectations are. And then into the third year, it's again, wean me off even more from rewards. Make it where I'm giving myself rewards. In other words, the student is rewarding themselves for having accomplished rather than they're getting 12 stripes and a belt eight or 16 lessons. And then finally, by black belt, it should be a pretty harsh and brutal process where they really have to step up to the plate, and you know, nobody's cheering for them and nobody's applauding for them, and it's got a pretty heavy bar, and obviously there's an exciting goal at the end. And then once they get to black belt, the next stage of it is it's got to be I'm back to white belt. So I'm a black belt, but I'm a first degree black belt in a hierarchy of people that I'm at my, say, fourth year, but there are people who are on their 40th year, so I'm now a white belt again. And part of where people were having a lot of, you know, new black belts drop out is suddenly they feel like they've arrived. And so I think the next piece of it is, you know, we give them a conditional black belt. They're called a rookie. They're put in kind of a denigrated position within the hierarchy of the black belts, and it's made clear that they're just starting to learn. And then the next level through first degree, second degree, third degree black belt is, you know, I saw Junior Institute 25 years ago, or more than that now, is if you say, okay, you know, welcome to the team. In 3 years, you have another test, and you can test for a second degree black belt, and here's the form you have to learn. Well, that doesn't work. It's now like you just graduated high school and you're going into your college experience, or you just got your bachelor's degree and you're going into your master's. There still has to be a midterm and a final, and a midterm and a final, and a midterm and a final. And so there still has to be every 3 or 4 months a progress check, and a given number of progress checks on the way to secondary black belt, and so forth. So it's important to keep that process going. And again, keep that process going, not in such a way that it's you get a stripe for just smiling and come showing up for class, because you've weaned them off of a lot of that. But it's a mid and a final on the way to their bachelor's degree, which think of that as a secondary black belt, or in the way their master's degree, think of that as a third degree black belt, and so forth, just like, you know, college would.
I think we're kind of losing you again. You're kind of digitizing out on us. But that's actually better. You know something that, again, with the folks who are on the line today, you guys know me pretty well. You know us pretty well. And I always like to look outside the industry, too, because I think it's really useful to get perspective. And if you look at, you know, like the multi-level marketing industry, right? And again, you know, you guys all know, I'm not saying that we're all Amway people, right? But something that's an interesting human potential or human performance lesson to learn is if you look at Amway, if you look at any of these MLMs who are very successful, they do exactly what you just described. When you sign up to be a Mana V distributor or whatever it is, right? I mean, whatever these things are, the very first tier for you is you get the pin for showing up for your first meeting. And then you get the pin to show up for 5 meetings in a row. And then you get the pin that you get when you make your first presentation. Doesn't have anything to do with making sales, but you made your first presentation. And then you get the award for 5 presentations, and then 10, and then, right? And all of this is about human nature, right? I mean, if we look at the video game industry, and if we look at all of these, you know, if you think of, like, online video games, it's a great model for martial arts because it's a very similar market, right? And you've got exactly the same structure. When you start on World of Warcraft or whatever the most popular one is now, you start off with a really weak character and you go out on a couple of really easy missions and you get, you know, a level, and then you get a cool sword, and then, you know, whatever, right? So it's exactly the same structure. And all of that structure works because of human behavior, not because of martial arts or not because of video games or not because of MLM or not because of sales. It works because it speaks to the fundamental nature of a human. And human beings have a need to be successful. They have a need to feel successful. And if you haven't done that for your beginner students, if they haven't had that need to feel successful and feel like they're accomplishing something, if they don't have that need stimulated, then you're doing your best to push them out the door as quick as you can. And I know the real traditionalists in many cases say, well, you know, I'm not going to water down my white belt curriculum because my curriculum is my curriculum, and if they can't do the 65-move long form and break 3 boards, then they can't be a green belt in my school. And, I mean, that's fine, right? I mean, I understand that perspective. I don't agree with it.
No,
I understand it. What's that?
No, that's stupid.
Well, I understand it. I don't agree with it.
Well, and again, the reason I'm saying that is, what you, and again, you know, I, back in the 60s and 70s, you know, we had people who were, you know, gold belts for 3 years because they were the number one gold belt in the state in the tournament competition, right? But what you want at the early stages is you want an environment that creates commitment and creates enthusiasm, because the product is not what a student has learned over 6 months. The product is what the student has learned over 6 years. And so if you don't create an environment that's going to keep them for 6 years, you're creating an environment where they're never going to get any good. And it doesn't matter how thoroughly you teach the early forms, and everybody in the call knows this, but it's not how well you teach the early forms that makes a student, as them staying the black belt, second degree black belt, third degree black belt, and really making it a lifetime commitment. So, again, those guys, the way they justified it was, well, look at the quality of my black belts. And what you'd do is you'd look around and you'd see that they'd had 500 people come into their program over the last 5 years, and they had 3 black belts. And, you know, just because you're effective at running off everybody who's not talented doesn't mean you're good at teaching. So the, you know, the issue of whether you're a good teacher or not is can you get the people who start at a mediocre level, can you get them up to their maximum potential? And can you get the ones that have cerebral palsy or some other thing that perhaps they're never going to look like what you'd want a quality black belt to look like, but they've gotten to that level in their own capability. I mean, that's, you know, that's the definition of a quality teacher, not that you screen out the 99.9% that are never going to be very good and just keep the one or two that are going to get good under anybody.
Yeah, and you know, it goes back to, you know, the Vince Lombardi quote is traditional sports don't build character. It simply weeds out the ones who don't have it. And that's what I believe to be the sort of antiquated martial arts operational model, was just what you said. You make the beginning curriculum difficult enough that it weeds out all the weak ones. Therefore, you're left with all the good ones to teach. And don't you feel like a great teacher because look at how good all your people are, right? So I totally agree with you. And I think that that's a fundamental piece of human behavior, that you put that structure in place subconsciously, subliminally, and perhaps just because you've always done it that way. Because and ultimately, it's because it makes you feel good because you think you're such a good teacher, right? Mm-hmm. And in reality, it's probably the opposite of that. So I couldn't agree more. So I had a couple of these little systems that I wanted to contribute that I know are useful for kind of creating that relationship. And I wanted to kind of share that quickly, and maybe if there's ways to expand on this, you know, maybe something for you to jump in on as well. But one of the things that we've talked about before, but I think is pretty important, is we have this little system I call the Thinking of You system, where any student who comes in with any special or specific challenge, right? Like you said, maybe perhaps cerebral palsy or pediatric bipolar or, you know, juvenile diabetes or whatever the case may be. And in some cases, it's just focus challenges or self-esteem challenges, whatever. Whatever the parent feels that they want to have worked on in this experience. I sort of have this system built where I use it sort of to preframe an objection, to preframe overcoming an objection, but really it's part of building an experience for these folks. And I have just this series of reports, and I think you guys have all seen it, but it's a multi-purpose thing. And if you don't have it, feel free to shoot me an email, and I'd be happy to email it all over to you. In fact, we've got it packaged up. We're going to be selling it as a product for somewhere between $400 and $600 in a couple of months here. So, but I'd be happy to just send it to you, anybody who's on the call today. Basically, I call it a thinking of you system, and the idea was, you know when you're sitting down with a parent, and they're explaining to you the situation with their son or daughter. In some cases, we know because we've experienced so many kids who have had that challenge, or so many customers, clients, prospects, students who have made it through challenges like that. We know that we can handle it, but mom always thinks in her mind, yeah, well, you've never seen my kid, right? See, she thinks, well, yeah, you may say you have all this experience dealing with ADHD, but you ain't seen Johnny yet, right? And that's what they think. That's what they believe. And you have to do something to overcome that belief. Or perhaps, number one, they never enroll. Or perhaps, number two, they just simply don't totally buy into what you're saying. They don't totally buy into the process. So a piece of creating this experience is, like I said, this thinking of you system. And basically what it is, the nuts and bolts of it, are little reports built around each of these little disorders. And they're designed to educate the parent and to persuade them that we really do know how to handle these things. In fact, here's some of the experience we've had with it before. This is what we make the instructors go through so that they know how to deal with these situations. Here's how we deal with these situations when they come up, not if they come up, but when they come up, here's how we're going to handle it. And we think you're going to be really impressed by that because we're going to handle it in a positive manner and make it a productive thing for them, you know, et cetera, right? And that really does go a long way to changing the perception of that customer, changing the perception of that new student, where now they're not just thinking about you like the soccer coach who's a volunteer one day a month, you know, and some dad who's never really, you know, decided to make themselves an expert in this area, right? So that's something I think that's really useful. And it's like, it's an example, I think, of a system. And I know, Master Oliver, you have, you know, 10 or 12 others that you can kind of mention, but it's an example of a system that we have in place so that we're specifically and deliberately creating that new member experience rather than just kind of throwing them to the wolves and hoping they have a good experience when they come to class. We want to orchestrate that, right? So that's kind of, you know, the thing that I wanted to contribute for today's call was that's one of the pieces that we use. It's relatively successful. What we do is after we finish the first introductory with a student, we walk straight to the front desk, fill out the little letter by hand, put the report with it, put it in an envelope, stick a stamp on it, and get it in the mail that day so that in many cases before even their second introductory lesson, they're getting that little packet in the mail. And they're seeing, wow, these guys, you know, are pretty serious about this. They really do understand pediatric bipolar disorder. They really do understand cerebral palsy or cystic fibrosis, or they really do understand how to deal with children who have dramatic ADHD challenges. So maybe my son won't be too bad for him, you know? You know, that sort of thing. That's the switch that you want to try to flip in their mind is, wow, you know, maybe they know, you know, maybe they're more skilled at this, and maybe my deal isn't a big deal, you know, that sort of deal. So that was kind of what I wanted to sort of, you know, throw into the ether. And again, if anybody wants those docs, I'd be happy to send them over to you. But that was sort of my kind of first step. So, Nashawra, anything either in the beginning of the term, midterm, or end of the term that you thought might be useful to create that customer experience?
Well, it's a long topic. you know, let me hit 7 or 8 quick bullet points. You know, bullet point number one is, you know, we beat up some of the traditionalists several times now, but one of it is your curriculum should be designed to get people to the next level of the curriculum. And it shouldn't be designed in the order that it's in because some guy 100 years ago who was less educated than we are, less knowledgeable in educational methodology than we are, less capable in teaching skills than we are, and put less thought into, teaching pedagogy than we have, decided to put in that order. And, you know, and unfortunately, many of us, you know, are a slave to the past, but, you know, the guys in the past weren't really as smart as or as capable of or as knowledgeable about educational methodology as we are now. So if you, one of the ways that you, on a big picture, look at your retention is you look at, is there some particular place in time where we have a spike? In other words, is there some place where we have double the number of people on a monthly basis dropping out than another? And what I've done a lot of over the years is look at it in our format that we've used for forever, is we're looking at people who are mostly renewed to get to black belt and beyond. So it's not a matter of contract. It's a matter of, you know, where is there that we have a spike in people dropping out? And what you often find is that's where you have a dead zone in your curriculum. I know that Dave Gober and I once put a lot of time and tracked for several years, you know, every belt and what the graduation rate was to belt. And I had gone through and done extensive stats on what our dropout rate was by belt color. And he was looking at, and then we did the same thing, at what the graduation rate was from each belt to the next belt. And it's an interesting exercise, because what you'll find oftentimes is there's a place where you need to put something new, different, and entertaining. Because just teaching them in the next form or just doing the next barring drill or some such thing doesn't cover it. So one of the big picture pieces is recognizing that there can be dead zones in the curriculum. If you look at our curriculum, you know, we added Eskrima at a point where we knew that we had a spike in our dropout rates. So we couldn't add another form. We couldn't add something that was like what they've already learned. We had to do something that was new, interesting, and exciting, and in part so that people 3 months back from it would be excited about getting there, and in part because we knew there was a point at which people were bored with what it was we were teaching normally, right? So one part of retention is looking at your curriculum structure over the full course of the program and making an informed decision on what you're going to teach where. And in some cases, it's what you're going to get rid of, And in other cases, it's where you need to go outside yourself and find something that's more entertaining. Because truthfully, you know, I had this conversation with Junior a few months ago, is, you know, his assessment is, if you just got him to do front punch, friendly front kick, side kick, and reverse punch, and got him to do each one of them, you know, 1,000 times a day, you know, they would master martial arts. Everything beyond that is entertainment, right? So if you look at your curriculum, you know, that was oversimplification, but you really want to look at it from a standpoint of, is it entertaining? Is it exciting? Does the psychology, does my psychology feel like that I'm now learning something new and something that's different and something that's entertaining and so forth? So one piece of the long term is looking for those dead zones in your curriculum and figuring out how to make sure that green belts don't drop out when they get to that point or blue belts don't drop out when they get to that point. So I guess next on my bullet point list would be is retention starts with the first intro, because the best way to ensure that people aren't going to drop out at a very high rate is to get them committed to train their black belt. And you know, when I went to Georgetown, I wasn't interviewing at Georgetown with the idea I was going to try it out for the midterms or that I was going to try it out for a semester. It was with the idea that you're going to get your bachelor's degree. And you wouldn't look at any of the top 50 schools in the country and think that the interview process would be, well, you know, we've decided that we'll let you try it till the midterms, and after the midterms, we'll decide whether you get to go to the next midterms or to the finals. And then after the second finals, we'll decide whether you get to, you know, finish your freshman year. No, it's about getting your bachelor's degree, or it's about going to medical school, or it's about getting your law degree. So the other piece of retention is you've got to start them from the beginning of the process with the exclusive focus being, this is the school where people graduate to black belt, and we're evaluating you to see if you qualify for that. And as soon as we decide that you qualify, we'll approve you for that program, and we'll put you into it. And I talked about two opposite things, but the biggest piece of retention is getting them committed early on. And the biggest point of dropouts for most schools is the first 3 to 6 months. And the place where you're guaranteed they're going to drop out is if they don't renew. So, yeah, I think it's very important to look at that. And I guess the last couple bullet points I might hit is really most of everything else is about interpersonal relationship. So it's about, Frank Brown just went to up to our training center in Sterling, Virginia for a couple of days and visited a couple of other schools, and he pointed out something that we've taught everybody for 25 years but probably haven't done it very well recently, was he walked into the school and all of the SWAT team and the brown belts, the black belts, and the staff, every one of them came up and introduced themselves to him, asked if he was new because they didn't know him, and asked if there's anything they could do to help. Now, see, a lot of it is, do you teach everybody in the school to be aware of everybody else in the school? Do you introduce the white belts to each other? Do you make sure they memorize each other's names? Do you make sure the gold belts all know each other? At some point, the only reason that people come to class is it's a social event rather than it's an educational event. And if you don't recognize that early on, and frankly encourage that social aspect, you lose a lot more people than you would need to. Then the second thing about it is people forgive a lot if they like you, and they blame a lot if they don't like you. So people like you if you like them, people like you if you know their name, people like you if you physically touch them, people like you if you physically, if you directly recognize them. And so you've got to train your staff on simple systems. Touch every student in the school 3 times while they're in class appropriately. Make sure you touch every parent 2 or 3 times while they're in the school, again, appropriately. Make sure you use every student's name 3 times. Make sure that the person at the front desk and everybody in the front of the school uses the parent's name on the way in and greets them by name. So it's simple things like use everybody's name 3 times, touch them 3 times, look them in the eye, recognize them in front of the class, point out something they're doing right, but you've got to train everybody in the school to do that every class so that you're really getting that sense of they like you, you like them, and that each of the students know each other, that they know each other's names, that they're socializing outside of the school. You know, that Toby, by the way, that used to annoy me is until I figured out what was going on, but we still have alumni black belts who get together for lunch with each other like once a week, and they haven't been in the school in maybe a couple of years. Or we have an active black belt who gets together for lunch once a week with three or four of the alumni. And it used to kind of annoy me, but then I realized what it was is they had probably stayed in class a year or two longer than they would have otherwise, just because that was their primary way of hanging out with their friends. And, and then we did such a good job that we created lifelong friendships, even if they physically or for whatever reason weren't that interested in physically training anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reality is everybody quits, right? So, I mean, yeah. The reality is that every one of your students at some point in time won't be a student anymore.
And every one of your staff. Member anymore.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, so I mean, and I know a lot of us get emotionally connected with all that. We get emotionally tied up in all that. And that's kind of a good thing because it means we really care about them and we really feel, you know, invested in them and things like that. And that's very important. But the reality of it is they're all, and Dan is a little more harsh about it, but his quote is they all go lame, right? Every employee you ever have, well, the whole story is the worst number in business is one, right? One key vendor, one key business partner, one key staff member, one key whatever is bad because eventually they all go lame. And when that one goes down, how much you have to be able to minimize the damage it does, right? So it's exactly the same. I mean, they're all going to go away at some point. The question is, when they go away, are they going to go away? Number one, being better for have known you, and number two, are they going to take with them, this experience, and are they really going to be a changed person? And I think, especially the black belt thing, I think that everybody's going to have a chance to take a look at really does accomplish that, right? And I think the only other thing I'd add to what you said, Mr. Oliver, is something that, I've had the same conversation. Well, maybe two things. But I think people get timid when they start. Again, we've been beaten up on the traditionalists, but not deliberately. So let's say I'm one of these. Let's say I'm one of these, real hardcore. Goju Ryu guys or something like that, right? And this is the only way you teach.
By the way, if you want to not beat up on the traditionalists, beat up on the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guys because they're the new version of the old guys.
Yeah, Mark.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark gets it, though. Mark understands all this stuff. But so what you've got is you've got, okay, this is the way I teach. This is the way the curriculum is. There's no two ways about it. And this is exactly what you need to do to be a gold belt. You got to do four forms, 65 self-defense techniques, break three boards, and run 65 miles, right? And see, they have absolutely no problem with maintaining, upholding, and enforcing those standards when it comes to exam time. But when you ask them to start delivering what the customer really wants, and let's say, for example, if they have to be respectful at home, and the mechanism that you're going to use to track whether they're being respectful at home is, you name it, some report that the parents have to give you or whatever, some mechanism. See, then all of a sudden they get cold feet, and they say, well, but what if their elementary school teacher doesn't sign off on it? Or what if their parent doesn't sign off on it? What do I do then? Well, it's exactly the same thing you would do if they didn't learn their forms, right? Number one, you'd identify it early. Number two, you'd get them special extra help if they needed help with that. Number three, you would...
I'll be on Jeff Smith for a second. The Jeff Smith quote 10 years ago was, you can't force them to read books when they're white belts.
Right.
What you're forcing them to read 9 books? Like, yeah. Well, they're only 7. No, I'm forcing the parent to read the book for the 7-year-old. Oh, you can't force the parent to do that. Now he's come around, obviously since then, but that was his quote when he first saw all that stuff.
Well, it's endemic. It's a very common thing. And hell, I mean, I've been there. In my own head, I've been there too. How am I going to have? I mean, one of the reading requirements that we require is the 7 habits of highly effective people. Now, look, you know, I consider myself to be relatively intelligent, and I have a hard time with that thing. I mean, that thing is like brutally written. I mean, you know, it's difficult to get through that.
The one his son wrote is readable.
Yeah, the highly effective teens. Yeah, much better. It is much better. But I mean, you know, you look at the thing and your eyes cross and you go, oh my God, this is like, you know, 6-point aerial type, and it's, you know, 500 and something pages or 400 and something pages, and you're like, oh my God, this is never. How am I going to do this, right? But the real answer is, it's exactly the same thing you would do if you were going to enforce them knowing the form when they test for their belt, right? I mean, it's the same thing. If they don't know their form on week 4, what happens? And unfortunately, a lot of these guys, nothing happens. But what has to happen, or what should happen, is...
I was going to say, by the way, in Covey's case, he's the one author that if you buy it on tape, it gets a lot worse.
Oh, Covey is and I made that mistake, too, frankly, when I was training the staff to do all this stuff. That was what I did, was I went out and bought all the books on CD. And that was just, on that one, it's a big mistake. On a bunch of the other ones, it's really useful. But Covey is horrible to listen to. I mean, really bad. So again, the answer is you would do exactly the same things you would do if they didn't know their curriculum. And what it is you'd have a midterm exam, or you'd have a pretest every couple of weeks. And if anybody was behind on that stuff, you would pop in with parachutes and fix it, right? You'd get them extra help on Saturday, or you'd get them, you know, an extra, you know, makeup class, or you'd have one of the leadership people work with them, or you'd have, you know, you would do all that stuff, or at least you should, you know, do all that stuff if they're behind in their curriculum. Well, it's exactly the same. If they're not doing their character assignments, if they're not doing whatever it is, you have to have a mechanism in place to be able to facilitate that. Which brings me to the next piece of this. Is I've had this exact same conversation with 4 coaching members yesterday, 4 of our peak performer members yesterday. And one of the things, in fact, Master Albert, mostly this is what we talk about on a daily or weekly basis, is I've got this favorite game I like to play, and the game is Zap the Gaps, right? And the game basically is you look at the stats, you look at the numbers in the business, you look at, you know, how many info calls came in, how many of those converted to appointment, how many of those appointments actually showed up, how many of those appointments actually showed up for the second lesson, how many of them actually enrolled, and then how many of them renewed, right? And then you figure out where the gap is, and you build systems around that gap, right? So, you know, this is sort of the same process. If you're looking, like what you were just describing, was you look at your dropout rate, and you say, look, my dropout rate spikes at blue belt, you know, or spikes at 12 months, or spikes at 14 months, or spikes at 6 months, whatever the case may be. Well, what the hell am I doing at 14 months? That's making all these people drop out, right? Now, certainly there's a human life cycle, right? There's a human attention span, which is probably about 90 days. But, you know, we have that we have to deal with. But at whatever point you see that there's a gap in these dropouts, that's where you start creating these experiences. You know, you back the clock up 30 days, and you say, well, if my major dropout point is at 10 months, what can I do at 9 and 8 months that could stem the tide, right? That could reframe these guys and really show them that there's much more to learn, or show them that they are competent, or show them, you know, what is the problem, you know? And then build systems around that, and that's really like you described at the beginning of the call today. Really, the current version of what the Black Belt Exam and this retreat is all about sort of is designed at some stage to help stem the tide of Black Belt dropouts. It's also designed to really make good quality Black Belt, you know, those types of things. So this thing doesn't exist just because this is what we did 50 years ago. This thing exists because it solves a problem. It solves a challenge along the way. It's specifically designed to facilitate a result. And that's how we all have to be thinking about these systems, right? So that was really my list. That was my, you know, kind of like my vision for the day. And I think what we should do, Mr. Oliver, is if anybody who is on the line who has something that you've been doing in your school that's working particularly well to either bolster retention, create that customer experience, and or helps, you know, increase the quality level of the students, you know, let's take some time now to sort of discuss that. So just hit 6 on your phone, and you'll be unmuted, and anything you'd be willing or, you know, you're able to share with the group is really useful. I mean, I know everybody, the great thing I like about these groups is that we all have our heads screwed on at least halfway right, right? We're all focused on the same objective. You know, if you take, you know, 400 of the NAMA members and put them in a room, you've got 350 of them who, you know, well, let's say 250 of them who, like, are pissed off that people are actually making money teaching martial arts, right? I mean, it's unfortunate, but it's true. And they're the guys who, like...
Yeah, I mean, and that's the top 10% of the industry.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
So everybody that we have on this call, at least, you know, we're all focused on the right thing. We're focused on creating an exceptional student experience and creating high-quality students. So you know, everybody's feedback is pretty useful in this environment, whereas in other environments, you have to be very careful of what you listen to and who you allow to speak, because you just, you know, you don't want to. And that was my experience, by the way, in that first marketing meeting I ever did. You know, I thought I had a great seminar. I thought that everybody was great and they were all super smart, and I had 20 really good ideas that I was going to go back to my school and do. And then at the end of the meeting, they started talking about everybody's current results, right? At the end, in fact, it was Greg Moody, Meshulver. It was Greg Moody. This was, I don't know, a lot of years ago, right? More than 10 years ago. And it was a great, I thought it was a great session. And then at the end of the meeting, Greg passed around the microphone and said, okay, great. Well, let's, you know, everybody basically contributed ideas to this thing. And Greg was great, was really good. But then, you know, they passed the microphone around at the end of the meeting. It was this guy over here was doing 7,000 a month, and this guy over here was doing 4, and this guy over here was doing 11. And, you know, at the time I was doing, you know, I don't know, 17 or 18 or 20, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a minute. I just sat in a room with 25 people who were all teaching me how to do worse than I'm doing now. You know, and you have to be careful with that. You know, you have to really be careful with, you know, who you allow to get into your head. So, again, specific student quality or retention items that are working well for you in your school or that are useful for you, you know, hit 6 on your phone, and I'll see you light up, and I'll call on you by area code. But Mesh Oliver, any last items on this so far?
Yeah, I had. Several people missed their one-on-one call this month, and typically July and August is pretty tough. When I was doing quite a bit of coaching before, I had a tendency to take those 2 months off even. But what I would point out, though, is I'd be happy to reschedule this time the ones who missed last Tuesday. If they would send me an email, I can probably do a set of calls next week. I may or may not, because I'm going to be, in fact, Don Sosa is going to be in town, and I'm going to be meeting a little bit with him with Smashburger, talking about their expansion. I had one of those days where I blocked out the day and sat on the phone, and a whole bunch of people didn't show up. You know, luckily I had, you know, a lot of work that I slept with me to get done, expecting a little bit of that. But anybody who didn't make their call, if you want to zap me an email, and I'd be happy to see if we can work a time that that works for us. And then in the future, I think we need to probably communicate those times a little bit more clearly so that everybody makes their call.
Yeah, and I'm in a similar – I only had actually 2 that didn't make it. Everybody else did, so that was useful. But if you're one of those 2 guys who didn't make the call, same deal. Shoot me an email too, and we'll set something up either tomorrow or maybe Monday, Tuesday. And what we've been doing is emailing around that schedule, and you know, we'll certainly email and fax around the schedule. Maybe there's another mechanism that we can use too to remind everybody. I'd like to do text messaging, but that's a little glitchy right now for some reason.
You know, a text message reminder would be nice, and I think we need to, frankly, probably put together a schedule for the next 6 months and just mail it to everybody as well. I'm increasingly convinced that email, you know, at least I know the volume of email I get, you know, and the number that people say they emailed me didn't show up, so I think it's increasingly worthless.
And more flaky, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So we don't have anybody unmuted yet. So, again, if you do have any of those ideas that you wanted to contribute, you know, feel free to just hit 6 and drop in. And if not, we'll wrap up here.
Yeah, or any questions particularly.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. Let me think about the San Diego thing is already Brian Tracy. I'm pretty excited about that, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And then November, we got all that. I think we got all that accomplished already, so I think we're in good shape. Okay, good. So again, in any specific questions, go ahead and hit 6 on your phone, and we'll handle that. If not, we will sign off pretty quickly here. Sorry, any last thought on, you know, because there's a lot of stuff happening behind the scenes at these black belt retreats. You know, I know that there's always been like, you know, you take these guys out there and we really do kind of beat them up pretty bad. I mean, you know, not physically, not like, you know, sparring or anything, but, you know, they go out and do an 8-mile walk or whatever, and they do the rough ski slopes in the middle of the night and all that sort of stuff. The thing that might be useful is, you know, when you do that, you do have to manage expectations pretty well. You do have to do a good job of kind of pre-framing everybody. And again, like you mentioned, this exam is really the end of an 8 or 9 week long process where they've been, you know, beat up pretty bad for 8 or 9 weeks. I mean, they're training, you know, 6 to 8 hours a week at minimum. Plus they're doing all sorts of volunteer things inside the school and all that sort of stuff. So they're really going through a lot of training and preparation for the exam. When they get to the exam, we already know that they're mostly all going to pass, right? I mean, because they physically, or at least physically, they all know their curriculum. They all can handle the cardiovascular. They can all do that. That there are a lot of times that, I'll say a lot of times, but there are some times where someone will fail at the examination for character gaps, which I think is interesting, but maybe those two points might be interesting to sort of describe. There's a good amount of pre-framing that has to happen before you take a family up there and they experience what they experience, so maybe a piece of that vocabulary might be useful. And then, you know what I mean? So how is it that you're kind of setting them up for that so that they understand what they're getting into and how that's all going to work?
Was that a question for me?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're creating this big experience, but it's also important to manage their expectation on the way there, right? So
we pre-frame them that it is the most incredibly abusive, difficult, difficult hurdle, impossible to imagine, and if they live through the experience, they'll be lucky and they might get their belts.
Right.
Now, that sounds facetious, but you know, in truth, one is the ones who haven't been there before are surrounded by a lot of people who have been, right? So what they get is a combination of two things. They get urban legend. So they get the expanded vision of things that are just terrifying, but you know, never happened and never would have. But they also get the parent who's been up there 5 times with their child, who, you know, explains to the mom what it's like, and, you know, explains to the mom, God, you know, I wasn't sure about this whole thing, and I was, you know, sitting aside, you know, biting my nails, but, you know, when it was all done, what I found was, right? So they get a combination of both of those things. You know, now, you know, what we do with it is, yeah, you're going to go up there, it's 48 hours straight through, you don't get sleep, make sure you're prepped, make sure, you know, you've eaten right, make sure you're well rested. And by the way, it's going to be after you've done your, you know, 10-hour week prep cycle. And so if you live through that process, you know, you get to be able to go up there and be exhausted when you get there. But I mean, truthfully, the expectations is we make it sound a lot worse than it is. And we, you know, and we expand that with the parents. The other thing we do, and again, this is counterintuitive for most people because we're talking about student service and improving retention. But the other thing we do is, you know, we clarify to the parents. Nobody's ever died. Nobody's ever gotten particularly hurt. You know, there's been a couple of little minor things. The minor things have always never had anything to do with the actual testing process. But in addition to that, we prep the parents early on. Look, you know, during the preparation process and during the test, we have the 3 S's of parent involvement. Sit down, shut up, and stay that way. You know, your feedback on the process is not particularly useful. your feedback where it's helpful is if your child has asthma, we want to know that we're handy with the inhaler or what the doctor has said. If your child has some other medical issue of some sort, we want to know about that. And your involvement is that you should be present at everything. You should be watching everything. You should be listening to everything. And if there's some place as a parent that you feel uncomfortable with your child doing whatever it is we're doing because you're worried about their safety, then feel free to pull them. They are your child. But that all kind of sounds harsh. But if you don't go into the process, you know, explain to the parents that their, you know, their opinion of the process isn't particularly relevant, then what you end up with is you end up with, you know, moms coming in and saying, well, it's 1 o'clock, my child needs to go to sleep. Well, okay, thanks for your opinion, but, you know, here's the test, and being their blackfoot is optional, and they can, you know, stay or not stay, but if they don't stay, they don't pass. So a lot of the managing needs, the expectation on that piece is making it sound harsher than it is, and truthfully, you know, explain to the parents that they're expected to be 100% involved, but they're not expected to give us, you know, much feedback on what their opinion is.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, really, if you're ultimately that clear about all this stuff, yeah, you really do have very little problems once you get there, right? I mean, is that accurate? I mean, I know we've really never had some sort of a, you know, tearful fit or something like that where a parent just, you know, thought it was unbelievable and, you know, stormed out or whatever. I'm sure over the years you've had, you know, one or two, but...
Had a couple, you know. You know, the most I can think about is we had a kid who was really mad that they were failed for their second or third degree black belt and made a little bit of public stink about that. So that wasn't really about the testing process itself, but it's about the outcome. But no, we do, frankly, I mean, we call it the, you know, sit down, shut up, and stay that way parent speech. We do that at the beginning of the prep cycle. So truthfully, at the beginning of the prep cycle, there's parent orientation, and everybody gets together, and, you know, we say, here's the process, and you can choose to be a black belt or not, but, you know, here's what you have to do, and parents, by the way, if there's any medical issues we don't know about, tell us, you know, and that includes emotional or physical. But other than that, you can decide to participate or not participate. Deciding not to participate is deciding not to get your black belt, but please don't try to critique the process, and please don't, you know, if you want to share your opinion about, you know, about how it's being run, you know, share with somebody else because we, you know, really don't want to hear it. But we have that conversation before they go into the prep process. Because otherwise what will happen is they all try to critique the process along the way. Well, you can't have my 7-year-old reading a Tony Robbins book. I mean, it's 582 pages, and he's, you know, I can barely understand him. It's like, well, Ms. Jones, we are having a 7-year-old read a Tony Robbins book, and really we're having you read it, right, and explain it to him. And by the way, here's the written test, and it's due next Wednesday.
Exactly. Okay, good. Well, again, I'm pretty excited for, you know, who is going to be able to make it out there and take a look at the thing and see what it's all about. And I mean, it's a piece of culture and a piece of, I think, of thinking straight is, you know, zap the gaps. How do I create a solution to the challenges that I have in this piece of the business? If this, you know, if I have this retention issue at 10 months, what can I do at 8 and 9 months to try to plug that gap and those types of things? And this is a really good solution to that on the back end. Creating that customer experience on the front end, I think, is really important. And having those kind of milestones along the way. And it, you know, it's kind of like, I don't want to say flippant, but, you know, it's overly simplifying to say, well, look, you just have to have all your staff members, you know, connected with all the parents all the time. They have to know what's going on with them. I mean, you know, but your staff don't get that. They don't get that. They need specific instructions. You know what I mean? They have to have a specific system that they can touch and interact with and be monitored and have measurable results with, or they just won't do it. You know, I mean, you know, they just never get to it. They're too busy teaching class or something, you know, or whatever it is. So I think all that's pretty important.
I would say it one more way. that sounds even more cynical, is it's just like a football team. The coach gives directions and the quarterback pulls them together between every play. And so if you're running the school and you don't pull all the staff together every 10 to 15 minutes and have a little huddle and put them back on task, a lot of this stuff doesn't happen. And at some point, some of the things, use everybody's name three times, touch them three times, greet everybody on the front door, that just becomes part of the culture. But there's, you know, you've got to recognize that anything as part of the culture takes an enormous amount of effort to change where they're at now to where you want them to be. You can't just have a meeting on Monday and say, here's the three things we're going to do from now on. It's got to be every 10 to 12 minutes little huddle where you redirect and focus them and point them, you know, in the right direction. And then from then on, it starts to become more and more ingrained.
I have a question. This is a question from Mr. It's off topic, Mr. Oliver. I'm trying to get my wife to come out to this event with me. Is skiing in Keystone a possibility that time of the year?
Well, let me first do my disclaimer that I'm not a skier, but I think that the irony is that I have a condo in Keystone and ski slopes and I don't like to ski, but I think the answer is yes. There are several of the areas. Loveland, which is just 20 minutes on the other side of the tunnel, and then Keystone and A Basin are all right there. And they're the three areas that tend to do artificial snow. So they're the ones that tend to open the earliest. And what you might do is just Google those three, A Basin, Keystone, and Loveland, and, you know, see if they have a projected opening date. You know, I know when we've Toby Doug Mooney or Moody, you got me started on that. Doug Moody's a skier, so every time we're doing the events, he's always checking them out. And I know that a lot of times Loveland and A Basin, you know, do artificial snow and are open a little early.
Last year, maybe it was the year before. I think it was the year before because I think I was having a baby last year, so I don't think I was there last year. But the year before, the retreat was the second week in October.
Yeah.
And the last day of the retreat was the first day that A Basin opened.
Okay.
So we're 2 weeks later this time. So, I mean, the answer is it depends on the weather, right? But for the last few years anyway, they've opened that week, you know?
This is the latest we've ever done it. And so, therefore, the closest to when peak season opens. So I think the answer is probably yes. I would imagine one of those three areas that are all, you know, either right there or 5 minutes up the highway one direction or 15 down the highway the other direction. I imagine one of the three, if not all three, will be open.
Thank you.
You bet.
Yeah, so we can all go surf in October and then we can go ski in November. I don't mind that.
You know, one of Jody's favorite memories ever is going out to San Diego and sailboating, and of course the hotel is right on the marina. So there, you know, San Diego is a fabulous place to be going as well as obviously Keystone is.
Yeah, I'm excited. Which by the way, you know, anybody on the call, if you have a circle of friends, you know, in your martial arts association, or you know, schools that are affiliated with you or schools that you work with or whatever, I mean, you know, how can you pass up a chance to go, you know, meet Brian, right? So if you have that sort of extended circle of folks who, you know, travel in your circle or who you have some sort of a level of relationship with who are school owners, you know, we certainly can do that affiliate thing. And if you can, you know, get those people to give me a call and get out to the event, it's certainly something I think that's going to be a big benefit for anybody who's attending, and certainly a benefit for the industry. I mean, Brian is kind of one of these powerhouse guys that he's $15,000 to do a 90-minute keynote. So, you know, I mean, that's kind of a valuable thing, right? So, you know, certainly in anybody who has that circle of friends, shoot me an email, and we'll figure out how to work together on it and make it a big win for everybody.
Absolutely. Well, good. So I think we've about run out of time for the day. And Ms. Miller, if I could ask you to ping me back when we're done here, that'd be great.
Sure. All right. Okay, thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate your time. Speak to you soon.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay, bye.